Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, delighted to welcome along Motherwell FC head honcho of media, Lewis Irons. Thanks for coming.
No, thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to chatting away with you.
Well, for the first time in league action this season, we managed to record 3 points on Saturday, a 2-0 win over Ross County. Jay, we talked last week about we didn't want to be scrambling about for those first 3 points, and we've managed to do it in week three with a win in what was a game of two halves, certainly.
Aye, I mean, in terms of the needing to get the points on the board, I mean, with Hearts on Saturday and an international break, not obviously wanting to suggest what we're going to lose against Hearts on Saturday, but it'll be a tough game, and so it's not out of the realms of possibility you could have been getting into that international break on 0 points. So it was important to get points on the board. Game of two halves, absolutely. First half again, I think we started very slowly against Rangers. It was 15-20 minutes before we got into the game. Same against St Johnstone, both games against Ross County. It's been the worst 45 minutes that I think you've seen in quite a long time, both up there and on Saturday.
Stephen Robinson actually said it was the worst 45 minutes he's experienced as a manager, so I don't think that Oldham team were brilliant either. So.
Well, that's it. But I mean, again, I think it's early enough in the season that you can kind of forgive that. I think Robinson, people are quite quick to kind of say, oh, new signings, they've got time to bed in and things like that, but so is the manager. He has been here a wee while now, till end of last season in the summer. But he's still learning about his players. He's still also learning about the opposition, you know, Ross County. And you know, I know we played them up there, but it was a different type of game. So he's still learning about the opposition. So after the first round of fixtures, I think that's when we should start to get a wee bit concerned if we're not, you know, starting every game reasonably well. And I think it deserves a lot of credit, because for me, the man of the match on the park was probably Alan Campbell when he came on at half-time. But I think man of the match overall was Stephen Robinson, because he basically won us the game with the decisions, not just the ability to see what he wanted to do at half time, but also the balls to actually do it, because our last manager would never have done that. They just saw it out with the same team up to about 10 minutes to go and then swapped like for like. So to have a manager who's prepared to make those changes, it's a big bonus.
Yeah, it was certainly a brave move, wasn't it? But he knew that it wasn't working to change it quickly, and the difference was almost instant. 8 minutes into the second half, you're a goal up, and I think the second half performance was influenced heavily by Ryan Bowman and Alan Campbell, who came off the bench.
It was, yeah. As you know, as Jay says, he's done really well to change it there. Come in half an hour at the game, whatever, he's changed the shape. And it's maybe a bit early to change personnel at that point, but he's waited to half time, swapped two for two. You know, and it's changed the game. As Jay says, the first half was diabolical, really. Pardon me, sorry, my throat's away. It's kind of worrying how slow we're actually starting, to be honest with you. As Jay's pointed out as well, Rangers, St Johnstone, I wasn't at Dingwall obviously, but it's really worrying that we were pretty slow, and we were lucky Ross County were pretty shite and we didn't lose any goals, to be honest with you. But as you said, the changes worked well. Ryan Bowman, every time I see Ryan Bowman, I think he works really well, works really hard, and he's just not stuck that ball in it. Well, actually, that's all right. He scored a couple of goals, but I think, you know, a goal on Saturday would have been just rewards for him. But unfortunately, a couple of bad passes, he was a bit, don't want to say lackadaisical when he was just a bit clean through, but, you know, as you pointed as well, Campbell, Bowman changed the game really, and as Jay says, you know, it's all credit to the manager for noticing that and getting in there.
Lewis, it's a luxury that we perhaps didn't have last season, that we can call in guys like Alan Campbell, who at times hasn't even been in the 18 this season, comes on, and he did change the game. He gave a completely different dimension to the midfield. There is that wee bit more strength and depth this season.
Yeah, there is, and I think part of that is also reflected in we're actually putting in a performance like we did in the first half and coming away with a victory, which you can't really underestimate that quality of sometimes having a bad game but still winning. And like you mentioned, the depth that we've got, I think Ryan Bowman can probably find that we were unlucky to be on the bench as much as he is when you consider how he started the season. Bit of Fred Cup, getting a couple of goals like he did, and he ended the season well as well. Good pre-season. And then Alan Campbell, for me, whenever he's played at under-20s level, I've been mightily impressed by him. And then when he's coming to the first team, I remember he got that important headed goal towards the end of last season, and that got him off the mark and got his confidence going. And yeah, I thought he changed the game when he came on. But like you say, Stephen Robinson, for me as well, was a man of the match, because to notice the change of shape that he did and also to have the personnel there to come on and change that was, yeah, like you say, just shows his depth there.
And guys like Karim McHugh, who was out with suspension, perhaps Gael Bigorama didn't put in his best 70-80 minutes that he played. That'll give Stephen Robinson a real selection headache, in a good way though, that he can call upon guys that he knows can come back in and do a job, or he maybe just sticks with Campbell because he's possibly earned it, certainly.
Yeah, well, he has. He's definitely done his stock no harm in putting in that performance, and like you say, Carl McHugh wasn't even in the squad and yet there was some encouraging signs there. So with Carl coming back, Alan Campbell playing like he did, Gael Bigorama perhaps having a dip like you said, there will be a bit of a toss up there in terms of who will start as we head into the game against Hearts.
Jay, do you look at Ross McLean also coming off the bench? It's good to see the guys that we saw a lot of promise in last season beginning to make their mark. Obviously McLean scoring the winning goal at Dingwall. Campbell, for me, man of the match. For you, man of the match as well, actually. We'll just disregard that you've already made that point. But yeah, as I say, the younger heads are coming in and certainly impressing.
Well, that's that. I mean, you look back at that Youth Cup final, the cracking win at Hampden, and you were obviously waiting to see who's going to go on and actually do it. And, you know, again, I don't want to make it seem as though every chance I get, I'm bringing up Mark McGee and having a go at him, but there did seem to be a bit of a... Although Mark McGee did give a lot of these guys a bit of time and a bit of game time, it was a bit haphazard. You know, almost it was as though there was a token young player in there, but you weren't too sure who it was going to be until the team was announced. Whereas now we actually look as though, you know, the likes of Campbell, I mean, that wasn't just... Particularly the role he was playing, you know, I mean, there was one part where he went through about three players to win the ball. It wasn't, you know, a young guy, you know, timid and sort of trying to settle in. I mean, it was a guy who's ready just to go in there and do a job. Same with Ross McLean. Ross McLean obviously was coming on to a really good game. Think back to that Celtic, the 4-3 game against Celtic, where he was fantastic. Then obviously missed out an injury. But yeah, he came on, changed the game up at Dingwall, obviously the winner. Could he set up Ryan Bowman for his goal if he'd maybe just, you know, a bit better... you know, execution, unfortunately that happens. But he's another player who is, you know, at some point you need to maybe stop actually just thinking of them as the young lads and actually think of them as first team players who can be called upon and can do a job. Because I think if we went into Saturday's game and both McLean and Campbell were starting, I think you'd be quite happy with that. I think that would be a strong team.
Yeah. What I liked on Saturday as well was when Tate went to left wing back. But we seem a bit lost when Freer's not playing in there, and obviously we changed that, but we all know Richard Tate can use his left foot, you know, his assists come for his left foot. So, and I think that when we go to 4-4-2, we don't really look as if we know what we're doing, or it's not even 4-4-2 really, it's 4-5-1 in it, with Fisher playing on the left. So it's good to see that Richard Tate can fill that gap on that left side pretty easily there, because he's done really well, I thought. And I think come Hearts, we'll probably see us going back to the back three with, you know, Tate and possibly Cadden out there, which again might leave space for Alan Campbell in the midfield. Mm-hmm. As you say, depending on, you know, how he sets up and how it goes. So I'm pretty hopeful to see us go back to the back three, even though I was pretty critical in a back three when it was, especially you know the tail end of last year. But I think we're a bit more settled now, and the players certainly seem to, well, for what I've seen, the players certainly seem a bit more comfortable with the back three. So I'm hoping to see we go back to the back three, and probably I hope Tate plays left wing back, to be honest with you.
And just going back to a point that you made, Jay, about the young lads, and just like you say, you wouldn't be concerned if you saw these names in the team sheet. And just today I was speaking to Gail Biggerman and Stephen Robinson, and they were joking about the attitude of the boys, and Alan Campbell apparently blows most people out of the water in training. Like, his attitude's so impressive, he works so hard, like you mentioned, he goes through three players at points on a ball. And that's what's encouraging for me as well, is that these young boys aren't, like you mentioned maybe last season, they aren't just a token young player. Mm-hmm. They're actually doing these things to force the manager's hand a bit, and they are earning their stripes, I feel like. So for Alan Campbell, like, every game that he's out there's a huge opportunity for him, and he's shown that he's capable. So like you say, I think there's encouraging signs there, and it goes back to what you said as well about the strength and depth. Thank you.
Yeah, you were on commentary, you wouldn't have expected that was Richard Tate standing at the centre of the penalty box to finish off after. And I've been really impressed by the boy. I'm choking now. Andrew Davis, I think he's colossal, yeah, at the back for County, but that was an uncharacteristic mistake from him. Yeah. And who else but Richard Tate, your left back in the afternoon, standing right behind him to finish it off. But that's twice that's happened this season.
I know, he showed the composure of a centre forward, didn't he? And like you say,
the last time I know, he was playing right back when he ended up on that left hand side.
I know, he is. He's making a bit of a habit of that. Not that we'll complain, but no, it was a good finish from him as well, to be fair, on his right foot. It's his stronger foot, of course, but yeah, popping up in those areas, it's always good to see your defenders not hesitating to get forward.
Yeah, getting amongst the goals, and Louis Moult finally got off the mark in the league. I say finally, we're only three games in, but he's cut a frustrated figure, and he continues to cut a frustrated figure for me. Quite evident in the first half particularly, where decisions perhaps weren't going his way. We've talked about maybe signs of petulance sneaking in. I think that was quite evident in the first half, but the second half, much better linking up. I think a lot of the players were off the pace in the first half. He gets that first goal, and we've got to hope that kicks him on a wee bit.
Aye, I mean, you know, it's easy to kind of speculate over, you know, why he's perhaps not the player he was last season, whether it's physical, because he was, you know, injured in operations and things like that. You've also got, obviously, the lingering will-he-won't-he transfer deadline day kind of approaching. For me, it's not quite the same Louis Moult that we were seeing last season in terms of mentality. The thing that I think a lot of fans bought into with Louis Moult at the very start, before he sort of became the talisman, was the, you know, the really hard work. And what you got from Moult was he would just chase everyone down, would bust his arse, would run through brick walls. Whereas I think the Louis Moult that started this season is more concerned with, you know, maybe complaining to the referees and you know, hitting the deck a little bit too easily. I mean, we joked on Saturday about how it just felt as though you're watching Scott McDonald, as though the ghost of Scott McDonald had decided to possess Louis Moult's body. But, you know, even, I mean, obviously, we're joking about it, but it's got, you know, negative consequences. I've noticed, even just the game on Saturday, you know, you talk about the hero worship of Louis Moult, but it was a wee bit, you know, a few folks starting to get a wee bit riled up with him, you know, chucking himself down a bit too easy. There was one bit, I think, where he didn't get a foul. Can't remember whether it was or it wasn't, but he just kind of sat there for about 30 to 40 seconds, just as the game went on around him, just in a huff. It doesn't seem like the same Louis Moult as it was last season. But, you know, we know what he's capable of, we know what he can do. And if Saturday is to be his last game, then I would much rather see the Louis Moult for last season, rather than the one, or even the Louis Moult for the second half, because you're right, he did, you know, button down in the second half and actually gave us a good performance, got his goal, albeit for the penalty spot. And yeah, we know what he can do, so hopefully he'll do it on Saturday, and then we'll see what happens after that.
I'll kind of try and get it from two different perspectives, the fan one, and then you with your official head on, I suppose. Bust out the news on Friday, we don't get to see the press conferences instantly. There's journalists tweeting bits of a story, and it's leaked out, and before you know it, everyone's got their opinion on it. I think there was a stark difference between what has been reported on Friday and what Stephen Robinson said in his press conference. I don't know whether it's the lack of characters on Twitter, but certainly Alison Conroy from Clyde One reported a bit of a story as a headline. That must affect Louis Moult when particularly when the social media storm starts and he's getting all these messages personally to his account, which is absolutely miles out, it must be said. But, but you've got all this attention on him. He's coming back from injury. There's obviously pressure there as well to perform. It can't be easy for Louis Moult.
It won't be. You're right, it won't be. As she says, the first thing, obviously, the Alison Fay, the wherever she's from, sorry, tweeted that, you know, Louis Moult has refused, told the club he's refused to sign a contract. I watched the press conference when it came out, and I can understand why it's been reported like that, but I think what was really said was Louis wants to move on, and I think everybody knows he wants to move on, but I don't know whether or not I should be saying that, but I tweeted about it, and immediately, I won't even say it, but somebody texted me saying, "That's not true, this is not true. William Oakes Nora coming to us and said officially, I'm refusing to sign this," or whatever. So, you know, I immediately, I got the text telling me that, and I was like, fair dues, that's fair enough. And that's how I came to the conclusion, obviously, that William Oakes obviously saying, "I would like to move on, see what happens." But he said it himself, he's happy to stay here, see what happens. I don't think he's got any intention of signing any contracts, which is fair enough as well. But it's then up to the club as to, you know, what do they want to do? Because they'll have to look for a replacement, because you can't take the chance that he's not going to move. We end up with the situation we had last year with Marvin Johnson, where he leaves in the last second and we've nobody to fill his position. And it's, know that, again, I like the look of Fisher and Bowman as well, but I think if Louis does go, we need another player in there as well. But as he says, these sort of things will all get to him. And as Jay says, in the first half, we were talking, Scott McDonald has contributed a lot to Mull over the years, whether it be Lee Irwin, you know, at Ibrox and things like that. That last 6 months, Scott McDonald's got a lot of credit for moaning Lee Irwin through the games, basically. But he seems to have taught Louis Moult all his wee petulant sort of things. You know, I would like to say as well, I don't think it helped the way that we played in the first half. Louis Moult was up front himself for the first 30-35 minutes, and we were punting the ball at him. And whether or not he was actually going for the ball, the first thing that was happening was the defenders were on his back, you know, out-jumping him, basically. They're coming towards the ball, he's backing up. The defender's going to win the balls all day. You know, and it did start to get a wee bit petulant and start a wee bit frustrated. And then when it changed up a wee bit, personnel changed up as well in the second half. And as you say, we've seen a completely different Louis Moult in the second half. Grabbed it, got his goal, albeit 12 yards wider than you expect him to get. But, you know, as you say, these sort of things, and again, I think playing up front himself is no great for him either. So I think these sort of things are going to get to him. And as you say, it's going to be speculated to, is it getting to him in his head, or is it because he's injured or whatever. But I think he's a professional, and even if he doesn't leave, and he leaves in January or in May for nothing, you know, I think he'll give his best, and, you know, he's back at a few goals before he goes.
Lewis, there's certainly no doubt that, and you'll know him personally, that he always seems so focused and dedicated to the cause. It can't help when, obviously, you're hosting your weekly press conference, the questions are going to be asked, is the name in most people's lips just now, so the questions are asked, it's kind of how you guys then manage it, I suppose, to kind of try and, I don't know, create a diversion of sorts and keep Louis Moult settled and happy, whether he remains here.
Yeah, naturally that you'd think that would be quite a problem, but one of the things that at any club, if it was their talisman, their top scorer that was being linked with moves, you'd think it'd be quite unsettling. But I think everything's been so public with Motherwell. Motherwell have put all their cards on the table and said, this is what we're offering, this is the best we can offer you. There you are. And Louis Moult has said he's considering it, or he's doing this. Things may swing while the transfer window's open with a player. Of course, he'll be speaking to agents and other things like that. That's just natural. But that's not ever affected him personally. I do think that, I agree with you guys, there's maybe a sharpness missing from his game at the moment. I don't know whether that is down to injury, because whenever I've been around training and stuff, he hasn't been quite at his sharpest. He's had to sit out at times. That's just natural with his recovery. But as a professional and as a guy, I have credit to Louis Moult and credit to the manager and Alan Burrows and the staff at Motherwell. They've handled it very well, so it doesn't concern me too much. And I just think the Motherwell have done their parts now with Louis Moulton. Yeah, it's up to him. It's his choice.
Can it be difficult though when, as I say, you possibly hadn't finished filming that press conference before?
Yeah.
That line from the presser is already out there, yeah. And you've got to kind of go back. When you know it's not the case, that's not exactly what was said, but it's kind of spun very much.
You know that with every press conference, and I think, like you say, with something like that situation going on, it's going to be his name on everybody's lips, so you're expecting something to be spun or some angle to be going out before we even had a chance to process what's happened. So very often I'll be standing here listening to it unfold and knowing exactly where it'll be going, but we just have to almost negate it in any way we can by putting out our side of things, and obviously as the club media, we don't wrap, bubble wrap anything, we just put it out as it is, and that's usually the way you have to take it. And like you say, it can be a bit of unsettling, and sort of words start getting thrown around before the video's even gone out there, so that's the kind of battles you're put up against, but there's not really too much you can do about it, unfortunately.
I think that's a very honest element of the club as well, that the press conference is quite an exclusive thing for a select amount of journalists that turn up in that day, but with Motherwell, you see every question that's asked, some of them brilliant questions, some of them not so good, but you kind of get an insight of what's happening, and that's that possibly makes it a bit easier for the fans to show some understanding when it comes to breaking news stories and everything else, that you know the club are just so up front with things.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the one, Alex Fisher, recently. The journalist said to him, "All right, how's things?" And he went, "Oh, that's fine. Have we started yet?" Yeah. I thought, that's brilliant. He just thinks that, because there was a female journalist there, he just thinks that bird's sitting on me. But can you know, like yourself, like, could you know maybe the gym trainer and say, don't ask any of these questions? And then when they get asked, say, MD, any other questions? Right, fine, go to here. And he dragged, what's his name?
Kishinya.
Warble.
Oh, that's right.
I dragged him because I can't remember the questions were, but he's. I tell you, ask that, then he's like, right, any other? No, out you go.
That's why gym trainer's such a popular figure. Lewis is working his way up in this world, like, commanding a lot of respect, and then you're telling him it'd be more like gym trainer.
But no, just in the Louis Moulton thing, I think it's easy to forget that he's part of a transfer. Like business plan, it's all very well. You can't have a successful business plan that says you bring in a guy at the very most you're going to get two seasons of him, and then because he does really well, you go, oh no, we'll just keep him because he's, you know, the fans like him. At the end of the day, that if you manage to sell him after 2 years of being your top player, then that's the business model working. That's not something you should be really. Obviously, if it suits you to offer him an extended deal and he accepts it, and you're not breaking the bank, and you manage to get a wee bit more for him, then fair enough. But I think that a lot of fans kind of think that, you know, you're in this business model. We sign the sort of lower league English players, you're in this business model, but then if you can then qualify to become a Motherwell legend, and then that means that all bets are off and we just offer you what you want and that's you there for good. If we manage to sell Louis Moult between the transfer window for, you know, the 750 grand that seemed to be the number touted plus add-ons, then that's got to be seen as a fantastic bit of business. But I do agree with Buster that it has to be done in a way that, if it is to happen, then it has to be done in a way that we're not left, you know, waiting the 6 months that we were for Elliot Freer to come in and replace Marvin Johnson, who, I must say, we're missing big time at the moment, Elliot Freer. And I think that's one of the things that changed the game, was actually having somebody like Tate on the left that could actually do something, but that's a different point.
I was going to say, that's basically what I was saying when I say we're missing him, and Tate went to the left-hand side. Yeah. It looked as if, you know, we actually had somebody who could do that game, but as you say, that was 10-15 minutes ago.
Interestingly, the stats behind that reflect as well. It took us 40 minutes to have our first cross at the box. And with Elliot Freer in the park, and in recent weeks, the stats have been through the roof. We've been getting like 29 to 40 crosses in the game.
It's been really strange, because particularly between the friendlies and the cup games, you could kind of sense a bit of aggro towards Freer in terms of, you know, some of the boo boys that, you know, getting on his back because, you know, he wasn't beating the man every time, or some of his crosses weren't you know, hitting their target. And yet it was, I think that might actually have been yourself, Buster, there was a game or two that you didn't make and you were just like, Elliot Freer has basically been involved in everything we've done in these highlights. And that's what he was basically creating everything. He scored a couple of goals, set up a couple of goals, but I think he's one of those players that is frustrating a lot of Motherwell fans. They get in his back, and then when you take him out of the team, there's this massive void that, you know, obviously Richard Tate just about filled on Saturday, but I think we'll be a far better team when Elliot Freer comes back.
I think that's something Stephen Robinson's pinpointed, that there's perhaps a lack of pace in the team just now, and more so when Elliot's not there. that's something you would hope would be addressed before the end of the window?
I'm not even too sure if Eric Freer's very fast. He's got a wee shimmy in 5 yards where he's brilliant, I think. But I don't know if he's actually got, you know, that sprinter's pace or whatever. But as you say, Stephen Robinson's been mentioning it constantly to yourselves. You know, he's looking for somebody with a bit of pace. He's mentioned a forward every time he said it basically as well. So to play up front, I assume. I think that Craig Tanner said it. Do you know what? I think that's why I was confused. He said a bit of a start if you want. He looked very good at times, and then the last couple of games, you know, I've not really been too impressed with him, to be fair. But they're definitely as a player there, I can see it, but I'm not too sure. You know, I'm not too sure how it fits in, as you say, with one forward, him in behind, the three in midfield, the wing backs, and the centre halves. So it's, you know, it'd be interesting to see who we are looking at, or what, you know, what does happen, whether Malou Moat's here or not, and you know what sort of player we do bring in if and when we do.
Another guy there's been a bit of speculation about is Chris Cadden, who has started the season brilliantly, had a really good Betfred League Cup, and he's carried that into the league. It's not surprising to see interest in Cadden, but given the length of time he's been here, perhaps I've got a bit more room for negotiation than we do with Louis Moult. It'll command a very decent fee to get Cadden anywhere near considering leaving for Park.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just the coaching staff here at Motherwell that think it, but a lot of people have this opinion that he is one of the finest young players in the country coming through. And for him to be as young as he is and has played as many first team games as he has, it's an experience that you can't really get at that level with many players. And yeah, I think he started the season fantastically. He had a bright start last season as well in the Betfred Cup, but he hasn't carried it into the league like he has this year. So naturally there's going to be speculation, but the club and Alan Burrows himself said it probably a few times, they're not going to be rolled over by anything. You know, it has to meet the criteria. There was a bid in the summer that was laughable, like, to say the least, that came in, and the club were in no place to even entertain it. So that's where they stand, and like you say, it's the model really working when you have not only players signed from down south, but players coming through the academy that are going to attract attention.
Yeah, and Cadden at the weekend, another good performance, but the, I suppose the really significant thing is I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
I will say then is all last season when Cadden played sort of on the right hand side.
I remember, it's okay.
When he played all season on the right hand side, even, you know, under McGee and things like that as well, I was constantly saying, I think he should be moved in a bit. Not necessarily dead centre or whatever, but the way that sort of Liam Grimshaw played, and Cadden played it as well, actually, you know, that sort of right-hand side of the three-man midfield when we were playing 4-3-3 at the time or whatever. I thought that was where he was brilliant. And he's moved inside, with the wing-back. He's obviously gone out and helping and stuff as well, but it's, as I say, it's talking about the youngsters in general and stuff like that, and Elliot Freer missing. First thing I said today was, move Cadden to the right, bring in Alan Campbell and put Tate on the left. So it's, I think one is... One of the best things about Malik is that he's willing to play anywhere. You know, he's played right back, he's obviously played right wing back, right midfield, centre midfield. He can do it all with sort of, you know, equal amount of ability as well. So, as you said as well, that he's a great young player. He's got 2 years to go in his contract, I believe. Well, that's maybe about what, 18, well, just over 18 months now. And as Robinson's mentioned before as well in his conferences, we're due a sizeable fee if he leaves for nothing anyway at the end of that. So it gives us a lot more room for negotiation, and you'd hope that we could maybe, you know, hit that seventh figure with something like him. But you know, it's a buyer's market basically, isn't it, really? So just have to wait and see.
Jay Potter said before, I had an absolute brain fart. You look at Cadden last season. I think it is on the back of his first full season. There was a lot expected of him. He really did hit the ground running the cup last year. I think maybe around January, February time showed signs of burning out a wee bit. Maybe just the expectation levels that were on him as well were increased. But he's continued to work, and it's pertinent to remember he's actually only 20 years of age as well. So he's a bright future ahead of him. What I would like to see happen is Caden get another year at Fir Park, learn more elements to his game. He's obviously worked with the fitness coach very closely. He's got a lot of upper body strength now. His power and his running is evident as well. But guys like Ben Hall went down south quite soon after breaking through to the first team. You can sometimes get swallowed up, and it takes these guys 3 or 4 years to come back and find their level, whether that be, maybe Ben Hall will be brilliant at Brighton in 4 years' time, but more than likely you'll see him back here at St Johnstone. And that's just how it seems to go. I would prefer to see our young talents playing in Scotland, develop in Scotland, and make their move at what I perceive to be the right time, I suppose.
No, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Caden's physique. I think that's the most, I mean, we've mentioned it plenty of times, but that Youth Cup final where it just looked like, you know, a group of Waynes and one of their dads was playing. It's like, you know, that the actual big adult was playing with all the boys. But I think that is probably testament to his attitude as well. You don't get, you know, that athletic at such a young age unless you're going and putting the work in. So I think out of all the young players that, you know, you think of guys, you know, Pearson and Paul Slane and guys like that, I think that we're not talking about, you know, one of the daft ones here. I think we're talking about a player who's probably got his head screwed on a little bit more and probably would be more than happy to kind of wait it out at Motherwell to improve his football and get a better move further down the line. In terms of, you know, we mentioned Molt earlier. I mean, I would, as much as I think Molt has obviously contributed a lot more over the last 2 years, and I love him, he's like this sort of hero of the club, I'd be far more disappointed if we lost Caden before the transfer window than I would be if we lost Molt, because I think there's so much more to come for Caden. You mentioned there about him burning out last season. I remember we went up to Inverness, I think it was the game in between Christmas and New Year, and there was rumours at that time that he was struggling with an injury.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to go for the Mark McGee hat-trick, but Mark McGee started them anyway. And so I remember someone saying to me, they just got off the bus on the way up, and they said to me something like, he'll not last 20 minutes of this game. And lo and behold, they get taken off after 20 minutes. So I think it was less about perhaps burning out and more about being played at a time when he was injured and shouldn't have been played. And Motherwell fans have maybe got a wee bit of a history of, you know, the young player comes through, Sean Fagan scores a header against Celtic, Mark Fitzpatrick scores a goal against Hearts, and suddenly they're the next big thing. They don't live up to it, and people start getting their backs, or they start thinking, oh, they're not as good as they could have been. But I think this season's proven that Caden still has that potential there. Scotland under 21 international, if he can go on and, you know, establish himself in that squad, then, you know, you talk about a million, you know, seven digits for him. If he can start doing that, then if you're talking about, what was it, 800 grand or something, Robinson was saying that would be entitled to at the end of the, I mean, if it's going to be north of that and he's playing for the Scotland under-21s and he's playing well for Motherwell and he's adding goals to his game, then, you know, I could see us selling Caden for at least more than we end up selling Louis Molt for. So, I think he's a fantastic player, but his attitude, I think, makes him the player he is as well.
The point you made there about the amount of appearances he's had at such a young age, I think possibly he's considered as an experienced campaigner in that squad now. We've obviously lost Keith Lasley, now Stephen McManus as well, Stevie Hamill out with injury. He is one of the guys that is, if you looked at Saturday's lineup, for instance, I would imagine he would have been right up there as one of the top two or three appearance holders for Motherwell.
And it goes back to what you actually said, Jay. I remember that game when Caden went off early up at Inverness, and I remember the build up to that game, there was a lot of chat around the club about Caden's struggling. And that people were worried because he is so important to the team in the way that we play. Just like Elliot Freer is on the other side, I think Caden offers something else, a little bit more central than Elliot. Doesn't hug the touchline as much, but he's like an experienced boy already, and he's only 20. So for him to have that, like you look at everything going on with the Project Brave stuff in Scottish football at the moment, and for, I don't think you get many other players in the league at his age to have made that many appearances for the club that came through the academy.
I think, going back to what we mentioned about Alan Campbell, for example, as well, you think back about the players who have done well for Motherwell. For any club, actually, the players who have done well for any club, you know, they don't start suddenly making appearances when they're 22 or 23. They make these appearances when they're the same age as Caden. You're looking at Faddy, Pearson, you know, players like that. Keith Lasley started young. I know he was a spark or whatever, but he came in and started kind of...
Not a very good one, obviously.
No, I imagine the likes of like Goodwillie, Stevie May...
Stevie Hamill.
Cummins and all guys. That. Guys at other teams probably were about the same age that they kind of came in and started.
You know, obviously, you know, you get players who develop a bit later as well, but there's obviously a trend there where the better players, even the players who are great for a club like us, you know, they all start pretty young and they're in the first team pretty young. So, you know, it's something that you'd like to see with somebody like Alan Campbell, Ross McLean, you know, maybe some of the other guys who are coming through.
It links that in quite well. Cadden obviously went out on loan to Albion Rovers this week. Luke Watt and Jake Hastie both moving to Airdrie on initial 6 month loan deals. Luke Watt, firstly, a guy that has had a wee taste of the first team. The last two seasons not really featured or been anywhere near. Still a young guy coming through. That being said, you would have to think that this is going to be a very important 6 months for Luke to see if he can push on and try and force his way back into the plans of Stephen Robinson, who will give young players a chance if they're good enough.
Yeah, and the club are very, very keen to get these young boys out on loan, and obviously the manager will have a big say in that, because he could have flung Alan Campbell out on loan if he wanted to, but there's a hesitancy there because he's got something to offer to the first team, whereas, like you say, Luke Watt had that taste, hasn't really kicked on from there, so I think he really does need it. He had a loan spell last season, but I think he's not at that position now where he's ready to break in at the first team again. So yeah, I think these loan spells, and you know, to be going out with Jake Hastie and of course Rowan, the goalkeeper that we signed as well, to have that cluster of other players together will probably help things as well, because if he's feeling a bit more settled there than down in Stranraer, if you like, I think that could help his game.
Payne Bovril, there's an Airdrie in the League 2, whatever league they're in, sort of League 1, I forget what they call them these days. I was on there asking the Airdrie fans, you know, like, what's your score like, you know, what do you like about him, whatever, and basically I'll be coming here to check up and see what's happening. just getting an opinion on what they think, checking up what they think, you know, Jake Hastie and stuff like that.
So you're going to be a babysitter, essentially.
I'll look after you. But there was Tom Fry's there as well, apparently, as a trialist. Well, he was on Saturday, at least. But they were saying, obviously, the goalkeeper's looking pretty decent. I think he's only a young boy. I don't know what age he is.
19.
But again, he's got a bunch of appearances, and it's a different level, I know, but you've got to start somewhere. Jake Hastie, I want to keep a track on him, because obviously you see coming through the ranks. Sorry, you'd like to think that he could, this sort of move could be what, you know, makes or breaks him, because I think we mentioned it before many times with Dom Thomas, the fact that he was coming on here getting 5-10 minutes didn't help him at all. Whether or not, you know, he'd take it a bit further if he'd went out on loan earlier, because I know he'd done really well at Queen of the South when he went there. And he seems to be doing all right at Kilmarnock now as well. So I'd like to see, you know, how it goes for him. Luke Watt, I think we've all heard that Luke Watt's time's done, basically. So I don't think there's any point in kidding on. I don't know who it was that dealt me that. But somebody mentioned that again on Saturday. He's been told he can find another club. And I'm leaning in your direction. I don't want to know if you know anything. But there just seems to be something where he dropped off the scene. I don't know what happened, whether or not he's, you know, he's fell out with somebody or whatever, but I don't think we'll see him feature for Motherwell again.
Sparrow kind of mentioned, you kind of hinted at it when you said, you know, an initial, you know, loan.
That's how the output was worded, though.
Whether it's an initial 6 month loan with a view to the end of the season loan or with a view to a permanent move. I think Luke Watt is one of those players that I think most Motherwell fans are probably just assuming is, you know, running down the clock. I think you've also got, I mean, I think when Ferguson was released, there was a few folk in Steelman online talking about, oh, I thought he'd something to offer. You know, even the same with Dom Thomas, but when Stephen Robinson came in, he made it very clear that he only wants to sign players with a certain mentality that can fit in the squad. And that same, you know, that same approach is going to be applied to the young players as well. So if there's a couple of guys there that just, for whatever reason, don't have the same mentality as a Cads or whatever, then, you know, by all means, move them on, let them go on and do their own thing. I mean, again, I think, not so much Watt, but I think Hastie was one of the ones that kind of made appearances for the bench under McGee, and there was thoughts that he might be the next in line, but it very well might still be, particularly with the Project Brave thing. You know, I think it's all this point systems of sending out players and development loans and all that kind of thing. So it could be, you know, I think it's, you know, ticking those boxes. But in terms of Luke Watt, I would like to see him come back and do something, because I think He's obviously been in the fringes for a long time, and you know, producing their own defenders isn't something that we've done. You know, you've got Sean Hutchison, of course, came through, but he was signed from elsewhere. You mentioned Ben Hall, again, signed from elsewhere. So, you know, guys coming through the youth ranks, not just at Motherwell, but at pretty much every Scottish club. You look at even the Scotland squad that was announced today, yeah. You don't have a lot of great centre-halves. So to be able to produce our own defenders would be a great start. So it would be good to see Luke Watt do it, but I'm not convinced a little bit like Buster as well.
He also played midfield on Saturday. Your old dad was checking up. apparently he played midfield for Airdrie. Because again, a couple of other Motherwell supporters for the Pie and Bottle forums were checking up on him.
And, have you assembled a team?
That's his chief scout.
No, but they were saying he played midfield, and somebody was saying, midfield, that's odd for him. He was a sort of centre-half right back for us. But no, as you say, I don't think we'll see him again. But as you say, it's a shame because he must be about 21 now, and it was when he was 17 or something he first played. I think he got thrown in a wee bit because we were short, but you know, he made a handful of appearances. From what I remember, didn't he seem to make any mistakes, didn't he look out of place, but as I say, you know, he's disappeared really since then, to be fair.
Lewis, do you know what the situation is with the Iron Brew Cup? Can Jake come back and play?
I'm not actually sure how the loan works, to be honest. I believe that from what I remember of the loans last season, I think they can come back for what's considered first team tournaments and competition. And that's the purpose of the development loan, I believe. But it'd be interesting to see if, because there, Jake Casey and Luke Watt do play a big role in Stephen Graham's under-20s. And I think, going back to what you said about Luke Watt, when I've seen him play, he's looked comfortable in the ball. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's got good range of passing. There must just be something about it's harder to impress as a defender and keep your place in the team, because you're not going to catch, you know, make the headlines or do anything to stand out from the defence. So maybe that must be a part of why Scotland as a whole struggle to produce these good young defenders, bar probably Kieran Tierney.
Can you explain the Iron Brew Cup in general? Because it's an absolute mess. Yeah. Last year I bought a wee bit of thinking, oh, let's get these Irish teams and these Welsh teams involved, and you know, it was Keith Lasley had on at the time, and he was like, I didn't even know that, I didn't even know what was happening. See, and he was Craigan's sort of right hand man.
We've landed the minute now.
I'm getting a trip to Belfast now, I'm quite looking forward to it.
It's a bit insane, and the whole bringing in two overage players for your
mentors,
what they're calling Colts, they can get that to fuck as well. Colts, what is this?
Colts is like when you play. I remember 20s. Playing in the FIFA festivals on like a Saturday morning, and you were up against Aston Villa Colts and all that kind of thing. And the mentors thing's a bit, it's like some sort of Karate Kid or something like that. Mr. Miyagi,
let's try and spin this in its head, because we've beaten it down far enough, I think. Crusaders.
You're just trying to justify. You're trying to build up.
Just after paying 140 quid. But it will be a good experience. I saw Alan Burrows on Twitter saying that was the draw that the club wanted. I can only imagine it will be quite an expensive trip for the club. But they're going up against a semi-professional team that should be a level above. It's a great test.
Oh, it's going to be a huge test for the boys. I was speaking to Stephen Craigan earlier. We did an interview for the YouTube channel, and he was saying that, you know, when you look at Queen's Park, that's a good level for these under-20s boys to be playing. Crusaders are a step up from that. Physically, they're a better team as well. So for these young lads to get an away trip like that, I think does a lot as well for them. But not only that, to be going up against a team like Crusaders, it'll be a big test. And I'm really interested to see how they'll do, because against Queen's Park, they were the much better team in the second half, struggled a little bit, almost like the first team did on Saturday. Poor first half, came into it in the second period, and I'm really interested to see how they'll do over in Belfast.
It must be a huge confidence boost for everyone around the club to see the under-20s go up against Queen's Park, a elite team, a respected side, a team that we saw in the Betfred League Cup, and to come out and top. Last season, there was obviously the Edinburgh City game, and then Airdrie was a step too far, but it looks like the team's developed that wee bit further and ready to push on.
Yeah, it does look like that. I've been impressed with the under-20s almost every time I've seen them play, and I think for Stephen Robinson as well, he's got such a good, close working relationship with Stephen Craigan, so that can only be healthy for the club as well. And I think that's why he's so willing to put these young boys in, because you know, he sees firsthand just how good they are, and and he's at a lot of the games as well. And yeah, they've had a good season, last season as a whole. Hopefully they can go one stage further in the Iron Brew Cup this time round, but it will be a tough ask. And Development League obviously gets underway tomorrow night as well. So yeah, I think things are looking good, and a few new faces as well with under-20s that I'm looking forward to seeing, because I haven't really seen much of them, Dylan King and such like that. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting season for them.
Jay, it was slightly disappointing to see the games being moved away from Fir Park. Obviously, they're not going to all be played in Belfast, unfortunately, but the games at Stirling will make it a bit more difficult to follow the progress of these young guys. But again, it's a morale boosting win, and what was nice to see as well is how much the players seem to be together celebrating the goals like the first team do, everybody involved in the celebrations. Clearly a tight bond between these guys. You look at Hearts, Rangers, Celtic all dropping out at this round of the Cup, so yeah, the future does look bright, and particularly when you consider it that way.
Well, that's it. I mean, we're sitting talking earlier about the season that they went to the Youth Cup final, and you know, some of the guys have pushed on since then, even. And, you know, you're talking about the celebrations of the goals. I mean, that's something good to see, because it's obviously, you know, something that seems quite a big thing in the first team as well. You know, when we score a goal, they're all involved. And you saw that again with under-20s. Again, wasn't there, but saw it in the highlights, that even the likes of Plummer, who was playing for the under-20s, was right in there involved, you know, not thinking, oh, I'm a first-team player, you know, good job, lads, that kind of thing. It was right in there celebrating. So that's obviously quite good, because, you know, you want that kind of rapport to be from the bottom up. And as I said, that might be, again, something that Stephen Robinson is quite big on. I think that a lot of the interviews, particularly during pre-season, not just with Robinson, but with the new players coming in, it was all about, you know, a great bunch of lads. I know it's the kind of cliches and all that, but, you know, really welcoming. The older guys have been really, really, you know, helpful and all that kind of thing. And it does seem as though team spirit's a big, big thing. And if that's, you know, the same in Stephen Craigan's side, then that's got to be a massive thing, because it also gives the guys a bit of confidence. You would like to think that then when they step up, maybe not your McLeans and your your Campbells, because they've had that kind of first team football, but if there's anybody else, whoever's next in the line, if that kind of good team spirit is there from the under-20s all the way up, then it shouldn't be quite as daunting a task to go in there and slot in between, you know, Carroll McHugh and Biggie. It might just be, you know, par for the course.
That's the one element of the 20s I like, and I would actually like to see the rules kind of similar to the Iron Brew Cup in the league games, where you don't want four or five, I don't know how many the maximum is, but it seemed last season that you would get four or five first-teamers going there to go through the motions on a Monday night, whereas I would prefer to see the younger boys getting a chance. If these guys aren't good enough to make the 18 and they're at an age they should be in the 18, then I don't see... Yes, I suppose they need to be match fit if they're called upon, but it's kind of a bit demoralising sometimes to see someone... They might believe they're dropping down a level, but quite often they're actually dropping the level of the game.
I think there's more to it than that, though, depending on who it is. Like, for example, last season, there was a lot of times last season I would watch the under-20s highlights, and my immediate thought would be, why the hell is James McFadden playing in this? Like, there's no point. But then when you step back and think, you know, it might be a great experience for the young guys around Faddy to actually play with him. But, you know, like the guys who are on the park alongside James McFadden, you know, so I think there's a balance there. I mean, there's no point in just putting on 11 youngsters. If you could put in one or two, you know, even if it's just an experience or a defender with a little bit more experience to, you know, complement the young players are there. It's not necessarily about going through the motions or even just fitness for the first team players, although I'm sure that obviously plays a big part when they're coming back for injury and things. But just to have a couple of older heads to, you know, talk players through or just give them the experience of playing alongside, you know, a James McFadden or something like that. I would imagine if you were playing alongside James McFadden for the under-20s last year, that would have been quite a big thing. Considering who he is, even although as I said, my first reaction was like, why is he taking someone's spot? That's pointless.
Well, you mentioned balance, and I think it goes a long way with the step up between the 20s and the first team as well, because there's a lot of focus. Well, when the Project Brave chat started, there was a lot of focus on, you know, you're playing with your 20s, you're looking great with your 20s, but you're playing against people who are your same age as you. And even if you're the top performer there, you might not be developing as you should be, because, and I hate to reference Chris Boyd, but I was watching the Simon Ferry things today. They are productive, obviously. But he was saying that as a youngster, in the reserves, and even, you know, when he was 14, he would go up and train with the local amateur team. He was playing against men, as he would say. Men, you know, he was challenging himself against people who were bigger, stronger, faster, and that made it. I mean, Chris Boyd might be strong, but he's definitely not fast. So it's, you know, it's basically what we've seen is that, you know, it gave him that sort of edge to step up, try and improve himself. And for you can slag Chris Boyd that you want, but he's good the way it is. Obviously, he's, you know, he's got most goals in whatever period it was before they changed the name of the league. So I think there's a gap there where if you're 19, 20, you'd want to be playing against some of the actual first team players, maybe, you know, the fringe players, maybe, as you say, guys who can't get into the first team or whatever. So I think they're bringing back the reserve league early next year as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know how that's going to work, whether the 20s are still up there as well, but mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely a place for people in the under 20, well, sorry, not necessarily in the 20s. I think there's a place for the youngsters playing with more experienced and bigger guys, basically. Yeah. But maybe the under 20s is not a place for it, but I think there's somewhere that it should be.
We'll try and move this on. We've stopped and stalled a wee bit there, but Stephen McManus, we've talked about younger players, an experienced head having to hang up his boots, did kind of seem to be on the cards. He's a niggling injury that he just basically couldn't beat, I suppose. The loss of Keith Lasley during the summer, Stephen Hamill has been very injury prone since the injury he picked up in Iceland two or three seasons ago. It's another loss, but I suppose the positive is, Lewis, that we keep him on the books. He's able to offer his guidance, a Scotland captain, a Celtic captain. Yeah. That can't be a bad thing for the under-15s and 16s learning off someone that's scaled the heights in football.
Yeah, it's huge. And you can't underestimate what, not just his knowledge and what he brings to the training game, but just his presence can bring to these young lads. You mentioned playing on the same pitch as James McFadden. I think there's an element of being coached or being around Steve McManus that does a lot for these young lads coming through. And for Motherwell, it was a very big decision for Steve McManus in the first place to retire, because he probably did still have more to give. And I think he just thought, with the fact he'd done his badges and he was in a position where he had an offer there, it was kind of the right time and the right decision for him to make. And in terms of Motherwell, I think it's the right decision to offer him that, just because of what I said there, what he brings to the table.
Yeah, Jez, I think that he's maybe a guy that's divided opinion amongst his supporters, but over 150 appearances for the club through some good times, some bad times, and we'll all remember the goal at Ibrox particularly. I think a good servant would certainly be an apt description for Stephen McManus.
Aye, he was one of those players that you didn't really know what you had until he wasn't there. It was certainly one of those players that you always heard. I think because when a player, you know, joins Motherwell and they were, you know, Celtic captain, played in the Champions League, played for Scotland, played down south, there's a lot more expectation on him. And it came up, and whether it was just, you know, because it was near the end of his career or whatever, a lot of people perhaps didn't feel he met that expectation. But I think he was one of those players that when you took him out of that team, there was a massive, massive gap there. I think he was a fantastic servant, like you say. I was actually very surprised when they retired and you saw just how long he'd been at the club and how many games he'd played. It seemed to kind of just fly by. Maybe I'm just getting older and time's just gone faster, but it seemed to just fly by. And you look, I mean, there was a last minute winner against Thistle as well, and, you know, as you said, the goal at Ibrox and stuff. So absolutely, he's one of those players that he's got so much experience and a genuinely good guy as well. He's a top player to have, you know, retiring, obviously then staying at your club in some capacity.
Saturday sees us host Hearts in the Scottish Premiership. Obviously, Buster getting off the mark was crucial. We talked about scrambling about for points. We no longer need to do that. But Hearts, a team, got off to a terrible start at Celtic Park, but they've bounced back with wins at Killy. They then get a good point at Ibrox on Saturday. They'll be 4 from 4 away from home as well, which obviously makes things a bit more difficult for John Daly. We've been poor against Hearts since they came back up. I think one win after the split under Mark McGee is the sum of our parts against Hearts. So really would like to see these fortunes turned around on Saturday.
Yeah, they're a bigger club, more resources, better players maybe as well in some places, but as you say, you know, that it's and as we've said many times in this league, MD can beat MD on their day, really, barring maybe Celtic, they know, actually, but it's a home game. It's one where, you know, you're nobody going to dread, and it Hearts on a bit of, I don't know, a bit of a weird space, you know. I prefer Cathro still to be there, to be honest with you, because I think Keeb's in absolute shambles. And again, there's me backing up Chris Boyd. but again, I don't think there's anything to fear. You have to just go for it, play your own game. I think that's one of the things which a lot of people like about Robinson. You know, he's playing his own game rather than trying to, you know, match up or, you know, something like that. But as I say, Hearts have got good players. They've got a lot of their funding and things like that through the Foundation of Hearts, whatever it is, according to Big Matty, at least anyway, they're getting a fortune off them. So, you know, they're a big team, but I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to win. As I say, they're in a weird place and they're obviously not playing any games at home. I'd maybe have preferred to play them at Murrayfield, decent away day, and, you know, it'd have been strange to be in there, no watching the rugby, to be fair. But as I say, I think we can maybe get someone out of there.
Lewis, Stephen Robinson has said, and it's something I think individually we've all kind of had a gripe with over the last couple of seasons, the fact that the pitch is fantastic out there, but we can't actually turn it into an advantage for ourselves. The home form has been patchy.
Yeah.
But Stephen Robinson is saying that he wants teams like Aberdeen, Hearts, Hibs coming to Fir Park and knowing that they're in for a hell of a game, and the team believing that we can take 3 points from them.
Yeah, I think Stephen Robinson was trying to put together a team at points last season that obviously that wasn't his personnel. He's had a summer transfer window now, and hopefully we've got an early reflection of what our home form might be like this season. We've lost once at home, and that was to Rangers, and I think we can all agree we played well and probably deserved a point from that game. But I think Saturday, like I said, we didn't play our best. Like you say, we've got a pitch there that encourages good football, keeping the ball on the deck, making the most of it, but we didn't play that well and we did get a victory. Hopefully this week it's the same again, as long as there's a victory, but I think we'll be able to go out there and play a bit more football and give Hearts a good game.
And Jay, just a final one on the Hearts game, Trevor Carson and Callum McHugh back. We'll talk about Carson to finish off. Russell Griffiths, clean sheet on Saturday. Didn't have a great deal to do. Would you expect to see Carson regain the gloves? Or?
Aye, no. I would fully expect Carson to go back in. I've been impressed. We were talking about it. I mean, I think myself and Buster were talking about it at the game. I don't think Griffiths has done a lot wrong, but I think he benefited hugely at the tail end of last season because he wasn't Craig Sampson, and so I think he appeared a lot better than he was. I still think he's a raw young goalkeeper, might still come good and hopefully will, but for me, Carson's our number one. I've been impressed with Carson. I think he commands his area really, really well. There was one at St Johnstone where it was like watching Steve Dykstra. You know, he came about 16 yards out to collect the ball. He's pulled off some great saves. Communication, his distribution is great. Getting up at Dingwall, he put Cadden through with one of the best through balls you'll see for the back. I would fully expect Carson to be in goals on Saturday, and I hope he is.
I have to agree with that. I don't think we could. I missed the point where he's argued or discussed, you know, his red card, but it wasn't really a mistake. It obviously was, sorry, but you know what I'm trying to get. It wasn't a stupid goalkeeping mistake that he's, you know, it wasn't a Craig Sampson-esque error. So he's not done anything wrong, really. So I'd expect him maybe to get straight back into the team. It's a bit of a shame for Russell Griffiths, as you say. He's not done anything wrong. I actually made one or two decent saves on Saturday as well. Clean sheet, as you mentioned, as well. But I think maybe it's just going to be Carson's probably, in my opinion, at least anyway, the better goalkeeper. So I'd put him straight back in.
To touch on just quickly what you were saying about his distribution and that ball he played to Cadden up at Dingwall. I was speaking to him this afternoon for this weekend's programme, and I spoke to him about his distribution, how much he's worked on it, and he said scathingly, he said, "Oh, my distribution's been terrible since I've come up here." And I went, "Sorry."
Oh, well, that's good.
And I was like, "Well, that's good news." But turns out he played as an outfielder till about the age of 16, so he's always worked on having the ball at his feet, so that's a good sign if that's him apparently doing too well with the distribution.
There's certainly worse problems to have there, having two fairly solid goalkeepers in the books as well. It's a nice problem. Let's finish up by just discussing a wee bit of your work. I didn't really give you a fair introduction, I don't believe, at the start of the podcast, but that'll be 2 seasons you've been out for part now.
Yeah, this is it, into the second season, so it's been quite a spell, and it's a great, great place to work, and the staff and coaching staff and players are also such a great group, and really happy to be a part of it all.
Well, I've kind of kiss arsed a wee bit there with the talking up the press conferences and the media coverage, but I think it is something that we all as Motherwell supporters really appreciate, the care and attention that goes into it, the output. I actually dropped off a friend after Dingwall at 2:30 in the morning, and already your post-match interview and the highlights were up, so that actually helped some low points in that journey where we had it on the phone and watched it back. There's obviously a hell of a lot of work going into it, but Motherwell seem to be at the forefront in terms of a lot of their media output.
Yeah, there is, and I've come from, you know, just looking from afar, and when I actually got given the job at Motherwell, I was lucky enough to actually see what the operations were like inside, because from the outside looking in, I was really impressed by what Motherwell did, and for me to come in, it's not, nothing's really launched on to the next step. It's been about continuing where we left off, and there's so much we're actually going to be introducing this season that it's quite exciting. Alan Burrows is really keen to keep us going in the direction that we are, because I think Motherwell do lead the way with a lot of things. You know, some of the bigger clubs especially charge for a lot of their content, you know, whereas for Motherwell it's not about that. There's no financial gain to be had from the media side of things, really. It's just about making our club look as good as we can, which is really the aim. And like I said, this season there's a lot of really exciting stuff coming up actually, which I'm really looking forward to.
And just a final note, the match day commentary, you've obviously charged with keeping the likes of Graham Barnstable in check.
he seems to get
rather excitable at times. how has that been for you?
I love commentating with Barney, to be honest, because I think it was the St Johnstone game, about 2 minutes in. There hadn't been a decision to make, and the referee made what I actually thought was a fair decision. It went against us, right enough, quite deep in St Johnstone's half. And I thought the referee made the right decision, and all of a sudden Barney was next to me going, "I can't believe that. What's he sitting there?" And I was like, "Oh, here he goes." And I was like, "Yep, Graham, it was a bad decision, that one, wasn't it?" And I was just kind of like, "Where's he come with that one?" But his commentary is brilliant, and the fact that he does it, you know, just out of a love for the club, really, and he brings a lot of colour to it, and it's great to sit alongside him, and it's an entertaining way to go through the game, put it that way.
And you obviously get quite a lot of supporters volunteering their time and helping out. That it must be quite good to get the supporters' kind of passion coming across in some of the stuff that you put out.
Oh, the support at Motherwell is incredible, really. Obviously we don't have the numbers of the bigger clubs in the country, but it's in terms of per head, I think the voluntary work and just people so keen to be involved in things and helping out is really makes the club what it is. I don't think it could be done without it, especially from a media perspective. There's only really two of us in the media team. Ross Clarkson's the video analyst. He does stuff with the media, you know, films for the highlights and stuff, which at other clubs the analyst would be the analyst, you know. So without people like Graham, you know, even journalists like Scott Mullen, they chip in for, you know, nothing, and it's just because they love the club, really, and that's what keeps the cogs turning nicely.
Yeah, we should kind of close this out with congratulations to Scott Mullen and also Gavin McCafferty, who haven't had a baby together, it must be said. But the respective missuses are both celebrating a newborn, so congratulations to them. Lewis, thank you very much for your time tonight, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Jay Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Star. Every
positivity.